What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, guys? Red Nation Hoops Podcast. My name is Solomon Ali at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. Here joined by Forrest Walker at Do Nots on Twitter. How you doing, man?
I guess I'm fine. I'm a little annoyed.
Before we get into the Rockets, we have to eat some crow here. We've been all over the Raptors all season, and we both thought they'd make the finals and that this Cavs team had no chance in hell. And I gotta say, I'm not even angry. I'm more mad at myself for buying into this Raptors team again.
I've said this to you before. There was no way to be correct here. You had to either buy into like the evidence of how you saw them play during the season, or you had to buy into just like an assumption that we know psychologically what's happening in their heads and that it trumps everything else. So whatever you decided to go with had an extremely high chance of being wrong. So I don't regret our process. I regret that we were made to look like idiots.
Like, I'm mad at myself for rooting for the Pacers to eliminate that miserable Cavs team, like, from the playoffs, like, in that game. They had a golden opportunity there in Game 7. Like,
They nearly did it.
Yeah, I thought the Pacers were a better team than the Cavs. Like, I really do.
They were.
Yeah, like...
They won that series by 40 points.
Yeah, It just made a lot of sense to me on a basketball level, everything but LeBron, right? LeBron trumps everything here. Like, before tonight, I was going to come on here, and I was going to rant about the Eastern Conference playoffs being less than ideal, and, like, we were going to get robbed of a Raptors-Sixers Eastern Conference Finals. But you know what, man? Like, I don't want to watch a Finals with LeBron. Like I fooled myself into thinking that I did, but, like, what we're watching right now... it's just art. Like, LeBron is just ridiculous right now. And I'll happily eat crow. Like, I'm thoroughly enjoying this. We're watching one of the two greatest basketball players of all time drag a dreadful Cavs team to the NBA Finals. And I'm just speechless. Completely speechless.
It's very impressive. I don't think it's fun. I would rather he had a good team. Him dragging a bunch of corpses and Kevin Love and Kyle Korver around with him is not any fun. It's stupid, it's backwards, and it's just going to ennoble the most obnoxious people out there. So I hate all of this. Everything about it is stupid and bad. The Raptors have betrayed everyone who believed in them, and they're dead to me.
I thought I was invested in the Raptors, man, but like it's... you're right, man. Like, it is a little annoying that we bought into this team from the beginning. We were on Raptors Island alone. Now it's Raptors life raft. It's not an island anymore. They kicked us off the island.
Yeah, like, the island sank.
Yeah, it's over. That we are on a life raft right now. It's a 3-0 series. And to put some context behind this, we're coming off the heels of Game 3 where LeBron just hit a ridiculous floater to win the game. And as soon as it left his hand, you knew it was going in. Like, you knew it was going in because it's the Raptors and it's LeBron James. And, like, he owns that team. And it's just, you're right. The psychological advantage is just massive.
He seems to have a special hate for that team, too. I think he really likes to put it to him. I think partially because they are kind of one of the more credible threats. Like, I think actually he disrespects them because he secretly respects them. That's my armchair psychology, at least, that they're one of the only teams that has any real chance to beat them, and that people keep seeing that. And it's very important to him to make sure to crush them in particular.
Yeah, like he definitely respects Dwayne Gacy, right? Like I think he's made that pretty clear. Like,
yeah, and perhaps hates him.
Right. Like Dwayne Gacy developed a pretty damn scheme in the 2011 finals to guard LeBron, and like it's been in LeBron's head for the longest time, and he's just like given this Raptors team hell every single time he's faced them in the playoffs. And yeah, I mean, I gotta say, like, I'm getting to the point where, like, normally I'm just like, I trust the numbers, I trust what I see during the regular season, and like all the data, I'm with it, but like I'm starting to like less and less trust what I see in the regular season, because if LeBron can do this, if he can coast through entire regular season half like crazy and like get to the finals and drag this team all the way as far as he has, like, why should we continue to put so much, you know, thought into this data that we receive every year and pour through and make our predictions off of? Like, maybe there's some, you know, empirical evidence in it, but like, if I think it probably just doesn't apply to LeBron. Like, LeBron just, he just owns that conference. Like, and we should just stop looking for someone to trump him.
Yeah. Well, and I think a large part of this is that all the metrics can't take into account certain things. Like, you can sort of make them take into account injuries with a bunch of effort, but you really can't take into account mentality. And yeah, we have a situation where there are two teams in the league who just sandbag. The Cavs have done it for years, and the Warriors are starting to do it now too, and they just fart around in the regular season, and it throws all the data totally off. You can't trust any data about a team that's going to give wildly different amounts of effort and play wildly differently between the regular season and playoffs. And people like to say that the playoffs and the regular season are two totally different animals, but that's just oversimplifying it to a ridiculous degree.
Historically, it has not been that. Historically, the data has been pretty accurate. Like, if you even look at something like point differential, which isn't the most accurate thing, like net rating is probably better, SRS is probably better, but point differential, that stat historically, if you go on through the annals of history, that's been pretty damn accurate in giving us an NBA champion.
Yeah, and the teams that go to the finals are almost always the one or the two seed. Almost right. Always. Like, this is not advanced mathematics. Right. It's just simply the fact that a really good team is usually going to beat the hell out of everybody in the regular season also. Like, it's not like the regular season causes the playoffs, but just if your team is really good, you're going to do well at everything you do. So teams don't usually sandbag like this. That's the big deal. That's all that it is. Like, yeah, their playoff does have things like matchup problems that aren't as big of a deal in the regular season, and you can just get a bad matchup. Like, I sincerely believe the Raptors would have beat literally any other team in the East. Literally any other team. But yeah, they had zero chance against the Cavs, apparently.
And here's the thing. I think OG Anunoby did a pretty good job on LeBron. Like, as good as a job as you can. Right? Like, I thought he was physical.
They played him to a tie twice.
Right, like, he was physical. He's really lengthy, and he's big. And maybe it's just, like, it's just a psychological thing, like, as we were talking about. And you know what? Maybe, like, we should probably abandon the idea that a team without a top 10 player is going to win an NBA championship. Like, or, like, even advance to the finals. Like, it hasn't happened historically that often. And, like, we've been kind of waiting for the team to do it. Like, I remember the Hawks, like, 3 years ago. Like, we thought that was going to be the first team to, you know, prove us wrong and get to an NBA Finals. But, like, I think you might just need a top 10 player, like, to really have a chance.
Well, they also keep getting eaten by LeBron in particular.
Sure.
Right? It's like he's like the exact opposite of that. That might actually play against other teams. It's hard to tell. The Hawks and the Raptors are really good against non-LeBron teams. But when you have a bunch of very good players versus one amazing player, so far this particular one amazing player has won out. I don't know how to say if that says anything beyond that LeBron is the top two player of all time. But yeah, it does seem like in order to beat LeBron, you have to have a hell of a lot of talent. You have to be the Spurs or the Warriors or somehow the Mavs.
Yeah, the Raptors' execution wasn't great this series too. So like we can't just say that, you know, the Raptors have been good all year and LeBron just kind of cheat coded them. Like they played differently in this series than they did in the regular season. Like all the beautiful ball movement and body movement stopped. It felt like they went back to the same old isolation Raptors, it's particularly in late game situations. You saw them try to incorporate it in the beginning of games, but like when it got down to it, they just went back to their DNA. And it's just, you know, Like, you try to buy into the Raptors team every year, and it's like they've just bitten me in the one too many times to really do this again. I bought into the Clippers year after year until the bitter end. I'm not buying into this team anymore. This Raptors, like, I'm not, like, I'm done with this Raptors team. Like, someone else can, you know, say this year is different with the Raptors. I'm not. I'm frankly moving on. Like, I'm looking for the next team that can possibly challenge LeBron. Like, maybe the Sixers or the Celtics, but not this team. This team clearly isn't going to do it.
Yeah, and it's really grim is that two of these games they won by the first one by 1 point in overtime that probably they should have won because there was like a bad call there, and this one that they like lost by 2 points at the very end. Yeah, they're extremely close in two of those games. Like, I feel like the worst case scenario is if they lose the next one by like 1 point as well. So they knew they were right there, and just couldn't do it.
Yeah,
it's incredibly demoralizing and grim, and I don't see any reason why the Cavs wouldn't just take care of the Celtics, despite the fact that the Celtics are really good, but I guess they're really hurt. And just to make everything as maximum stupid as possible, the Cavs will go back to the finals and get just absolutely clobbered.
Yeah, listen, I'm actually looking forward to it because I do not want to see the Celtics go on to the NBA Finals. Like, that's something I didn't want to see this Cavs team going to the NBA Finals, but I sure as hell do not want to see this Celtics team go on to the NBA Finals. Like, let's move on to the Rockets. We spent 10 minutes good on this topic.
it's worth it. All right, the Rockets. Hey, the Rockets are actually good.
Yeah, I'm glad we're doing this podcast after Game 3 and not after Game 1 or after Game 2, because we probably would have overreacted either way. Like, either way, Game 1 or Game 2.
Do you want to know who's overreacting? I'll tell you who's overreacting is all the predictive metrics, by the way. All the 538s and like the SRS and stuff like that, they are all giving the Rockets crazy odds right now of winning a championship. It is truly astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they've been, if you look at the metrics and if you look at their win total and you look their record, everything, like, they've been the best team in the playoffs. And I looked at the data last night, and it was pretty, it threw me aback because it felt like the Warriors had this on lock. But, like, I'm guessing the last game really swung it, huh? Like, the Warriors got blown out by the Pelicans, and the Rockets blew out the Jazz, and the data went completely the other way.
And the Jazz are a better team than the Pelicans by a decent amount, too.
Sure, yeah. So the Rockets have been playing better teams than the Warriors, too. So that does go in their favor. But yeah, I mean, like, if you look at the way the Rockets have performed in the postseason, their regular season metrics have translated pretty well. Like, yeah, pretty damn well. Like, offensively, they're the best team in the NBA in the playoffs. Defensively, they're second best team, which shocked me that they've been that good. I mean, if you look at it game by game, it makes sense. I mean, the first round, they were really great. We talked about it all round. Offensively, they struggled, but this round, it really felt like the last couple of games, combined with the last game in particular, got their offensive rating back up. And they looked like the same old Rockets, man. They looked like a dominant team. They looked like a 65-win juggernaut.
Yeah, honestly, after the worrying game two, game three pretty much convinced me that they're coming out of this series. Like,
are you off the cliff? Are you off the cliff?
No, I'm never off that ledge, but they're going to win this. They're almost certainly going to win this series. I mean, the Jazz might take another game. I think they might win one more, but I'm not going to give them short shrift. They're a really good team. They're probably the third or fourth best team remaining in the playoffs still, but they're not going to beat the Rockets. The Rockets have a 2-1 advantage is not amazing, but it's quite good when you consider the Jazz now have to win 3 out of 4 the rest of the way. If the Rockets get out there, so my big thing is that if the Rockets get out there tomorrow and they just go at the Jazz hard, that's a really, really good sign.
Right. Like, I think we can both agree that the Utah Jazz are like a really good team and they'll put up a fight. But the Rockets will probably like handle them like in like less than 7 games. Like, it's gonna be like if it goes to 7 games, I'd be thoroughly shocked. Like, Quinn Snyder is an excellent coach, and he made some smart adjustments in game two by slipping the ball screens and coaching the Rockets defense off guard. Like, the Rockets are just better. Like, they're just better. and better in almost every aspect of basketball. Like, this is a simple case of the Rockets are a 65-win ball club, and the Jazz, when they're at full health, are probably like a 50-ish win ball club, right? Like
maybe 54 or something, yeah. But they're right in like the low 50s.
Right. Like now the Jazz miss Ricky Rubio. Like, and that's clear because they don't have anyone who could properly guard Chris Paul and James Harden at the same time with quality defenders. Dante Exum's been good, but Harden's having himself like a hell of a series and frankly a hell of a playoffs. Like, I tweeted out his metrics in the morning, but like 30.4 points per game, 8.4 assists per game, 5.3 rebounds per game, 2.1 steals per game, 0.9 blocks per game, 58.6% true shooting, and a plus 10.5. The guy's been amazing in the playoffs. Like, in my opinion, and I'll go ahead and ask you, I think he's been the second best playoff performer in the NBA.
Yeah, he's been incredible. It's him and LeBron, just like in the regular season.
Yeah, it's like, and the Rockets turn into a flaming pile of dog on offense when he leaves the floor. And this has been a problem with the Rockets since the All-Star break. Chris Paul has not done a good job treading water when Harden sat. He doesn't have to build leads or anything, but like, they just can't consistently blow them and force Harden to check back into the game early. Like, some of this may be rotation-based, like when Harden sits, Nene and Gordon usually enter the game, and both of them have been pretty mediocre in the playoffs, aside from like a couple games here and there. Like, game three especially, like, they were really good. But like, the drop-off from Harden and Capella to Gordon and Nene is just massive, and that's probably why like the units without Harden have been really bad. Like, Chris Paul does have to step it up, but I do think there's some rotation stuff going on.
Yeah, that's probably true. I'm glad that Eric Gordon did look better in the last game. In game three, he looked a lot more like what the Rockets need him to be.
Right.
He shot like 50% of his shots from deep. He was like 60% shooting overall, I think. He was good. He hit his shots. He was playing more within himself. He wasn't doing as many weird runners and stuff. So that was really good to see. Eric Gordon has to be good for the Rockets to have a high ceiling.
Right, yeah. He scored 25 points. He had 4 threes. Like, just a monster performance for him overall. He looked more aggressive, looked quicker. Like I don't know if that makes sense, but he definitely looked like he had a spring in his step to start the game. And he looked like he was going to attack all game. And he went to the rim, and he shot his threes, and he didn't hesitate, which was a problem for him earlier in the playoffs. But yeah, he showed up in game three. Hopefully he comes back down. Like, he's been kind of inconsistent all playoffs. Like, he's had really highs. Like, in the Timberwolves game, I think he had a really great game three or game four. I can't remember which one it was. It was when the Rockets went down big in that first half and then came back. Do you remember the game I'm talking about?
Do you remember? Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I think, game four, wasn't it?
Yeah, so Eric Gordon was good in that game. And, like, he's had really, really high highs, but the lows have been miserable, man. It's gotten to the point where he gets unplayable because he hasn't been a great defender. He's been fine, but, like, in general, his plays definitely dropped off from regular season to postseason. But, yeah, it was good to see him have that game three. And Clint's been a monster in the playoffs. And
he's so good.
Yeah.
I was losing it. There was that one sequence where he came back to block. I don't remember whose shot it was. I think it might have been Gobert's. But he like switched on two different guys. Oh, yeah, it was Favors. Yeah, right. He switched on like two different guys during a defensive sequence, then recovered to block the shot at the rim. It was amazing. Clint Capella is a beast out there. He is going to get so paid this next year, and he deserves every penny of it.
Yeah, listen, I'm not sure what kind of contract he's going to sign this summer, but he's making the decision to match any offer he gets a lot easier by the day.
Yeah.
Like, 16 points per game, 13 rebounds per game, 2 blocks per game, 64% true shooting, and a plus 10 in the playoffs. Yeah,
he's dominated Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert. Like, consistently, not just like in one game here and there. He was consistently better than both of them.
Those are two of the top five centers in the NBA. Like, that's nuts. Like, that is nuts. Two of the top five centers in the NBA, arguably, that Clint Capella has dominated. Like, and that's Like, that's nuts. Like, that.
Yeah.
He's been so important to the Rockets' defense. Like, his defense has improved dramatically from where he was last year and this year. Like,
yeah, amazingly.
Yeah, like last year he was kind of eh. Like, he was fine. Like, he wasn't where you wanted him to be.
Yeah, he was a guy that seemed like he would be a great defensive anchor, but wasn't there yet. Like, mm-hmm. he was a dude that people, that a lot of people would assume is already there, but wasn't. This year, he's there.
Yeah, like last year, he had the shot blocking, and he was always a great switch defender. Like, he was always great at switching on the guards. Like, this was a talent, like, we noticed early in his career. You saw those flashes. But putting it together with the rim protection, like, this series has been, it's been fun. Like, you rarely get to watch a player, especially on a team this old, like, grow like this. Like, year after year, game after game, consistently improve. And get to the point where Mike D'Antoni trusts him to play late in the games. You remember that was a problem last year where Nene would close out games, and Rockets fans on Twitter would lose their shit. And like, and now it's like, it's gotten to the point where, like, if Clint Capela leaves the game, like, it's just for rest purposes. Like, Mike D'Antoni fully trusts him, and you hear him singing his praises after games, and he's earned every bit of it, man. The guy's been dominant.
Yeah, it reminds me of when Draymond Green had his big takeoff year. Like, they just found this guy who turned out to be fantastic because of internal growth. He's an amazing player. He plays exactly in his game. He's certainly helped out by the fact that James Harden and Chris Paul are on a team with him.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of load being carried, but, like, Kevin Durant is not right. Clint Capela does a lot. He's an anchor for that team. He is one of the best players in the league, and he is dangerously close to becoming a star.
Right. Like, I mean, and like, it's okay to be a star within your role. Like, Draymond was like this, right? That first year, like he was put in a really great situation too, surrounded by, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and now Kevin Durant. Like, it's fine to be a star within your role and be a really, really great player and be in a really great situation. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But you're right. It definitely is aided by the fact that he's playing with two of the five best passers in the NBA. Like, he's definitely, like, Chris Paul and James Harden are really great at finding him, especially James Harden in particular. Like, James Harden and him have excellent chemistry. Like, excellent chemistry. Like, Harden trusts him with some ridiculous passes that, like, you probably shouldn't be throwing to him. Like, he'll throw passes to him in transition and trust him to run the break. Like, with, like, three guards in front of him, and Clint Capela will Eurostep his way into a layup. And, like, that's just that's just something other bigs don't do. Like, I like the comparison of Tyson Chandler, like, of a young Clint Capela. Like, but, like, he might be better than Tyson Chandler in other aspects. Like, Tyson Chandler didn't run the floor like this. Like, he absolutely did not run the floor like this. He didn't have, like, just the mobility on the perimeter that Clint Capela has. It's just been so fun to watch how much of a freak this dude is.
Yeah, he has really improved his stamina as well.
Yeah.
Like, he had a problem playing 30 minutes plus, and that seems to have resolved. He is having no problems anymore. Like, I don't know, there's no part of his game that he has not improved, like, above and beyond expectations. I guess he could be shooting threes, but honestly, I don't even know if they need him to. I don't think it would even help anything.
If he could shoot threes, like, there are plays, like, you see during a game where Gobert completely backs off of him into the paint. Like, you see him completely backing off of Capela. He's like, you know what? This guy's not, he can't even shoot mid-range jumpers. Like, if he could just develop a nice mid-range two, and I know John Lucas is working on this with him, like, there's no doubt in my mind that this is in the works. Right, like, I think Rahat Huck talked about this on his podcast. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that John Lucas and the Rockets, this particular organization, would love him to take that step in the future. Now, that's still a ways away, and for the time being, he is an excellent star within his role. And, like, it's gotten to the point where, like, the Rockets don't even play small ball units anymore. They're very comfortable with him closing crunch time units with Clint. They're okay with playing big. Because they like that pick and roll threat out there. They like that lob threat out there because it opens up so much stuff for them. Like, Chris Paul gets a bunch of mid-range jumpers because of Capela's gravity. Like you would not believe the amount of open mid-range jumpers Chris Paul gets because a defender is afraid to sag off of him and help out. and Clint Capella's back there for lobs. Like, it's not even just like a consistent, you know, with the ball in his hands thing. Like, he doesn't need the ball in his hands to have gravity. Like, he's like a very much a vertical spacer in the truest sense of the word.
Yeah, he will catch any lob too. It is awesome. Watching Clint Capella is an absolute joy. And despite the contentiousness of some of the Rockets players, you know, James Harden and Chris Paul, a lot of people don't like watching their games. I don't know who is not liking Clint Capella. I think he's pretty universally liked anyway. He's a young guy, hasn't had a chance to, you know, he hasn't been dominant enough for people to hate him yet. He has a fun game that involves a lot of dunks and rim running, a lot of awesome blocks. So he's kind of the golden boy of the Rockets franchise right now, and it's well-deserved.
And probably most importantly, like, he understands what he's good at and what he's not good at, right?
Yep.
And
like he does only that, yeah.
Right, and this was a real problem with Dwight, and I don't want to get into Dwight again because that's over and done with, and like it's annoying to relitigate that. But this was a problem with Dwight, right? Like, Dwight wanted post up possessions. He wanted to slow the game down just to get garbage possessions where he scored like 0.8 points per possession. It just wasn't efficient. It wasn't worth the Rockets' time. He didn't play enough pick and roll. He didn't set enough screens for Harden. And like, Clint Capella knows what he's good at. He understands what he's good at. He does what he's good at, and he's gonna get paid because of that. Like, he understands this is what's gonna get me my money. Like, the Rockets are gonna pay me because they know I know what I'm doing, right? And that's just a real sign of maturity for a 23-year-old. With a lot of growth and potential in front of him. Like, we'll probably see his best years maybe even in 2 years from now. Like, he might still be far away from his prime. He's probably at an athletic peak right now, but in terms of putting it all together, like, we might not even be there yet.
Yeah, he's probably, usually it's how it works at about 25, 26 is when athleticism and skill kind of hits the biggest total between the two of them. So, yeah, he's probably a couple years out from his best season.
Yeah, and he has like a little quirky personality, like, and it just makes it really likable to fans. Like, Acapella with Capella is hilarious.
Like, Fashion Capella is good too. All these people think he is the king of like in arena interstitial segments.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you just like first, like, you said it best, man. The dude is just a lovable personality. Like, it's not even just the little segments they do with him, but like, you see clips of him at practice doing goofy stuff, and like, the Rockets love him. Like you hear like people, you hear the Rockets making fun of him during press conferences. Like, Harden and Paul always make fun of him during pressers, and like, you can tell like he's just a great chemistry guy, a great glue guy, possibly the Rockets' best glue guy.
Yeah, they've got a lot of those this season too. This team is really, really good. I am very close to buying in. I just need to see them hit some threes. That's my whole thing.
Is that
that's my entire thing.
Okay, yeah. So let's talk about this. So after game two, you were in a dark space there. Like, after game two, because you wanted them to be like invincible in the playoffs, right? To a point where you can trust them to go up against the Warriors and legitimately compete with them. Am I correct in what you were thinking?
Yeah, basically that in order to really feel good about them, they need to look pretty much unbeatable.
Right. And I argue that they don't need to be unbeatable. They just need to be as good as they possibly can and good enough to where you trust them to be a threat against the Warriors. Right. And I think they've gotten to the point where, like, I still don't think there's anybody out there that poses a threat to the Warriors like the Rockets do. And they've been good enough to me in the postseason, at least, to where I still think Rockets Warriors in the conference finals is going to be a beast of a series.
Oh, they will be the best team that the Warriors have played since Steve Kerr came on as coach.
Probably, right.
But that's still, it may not be enough. That's my concern, especially, and here's my big deal, especially if they can't shoot at least 33% from three. They have to consistently hit at least 33% from three, and they have been bad this playoff so far, much like they were last playoffs. Their shooting seems to fall off during the playoffs. It does kind of seem like it's this kind of variance right now. I know the Jazz are a really good three-point defense team, so they're being run off the line a little bit, but I want to see them shoot well from three for a couple of games in a row before I start buying in more.
Well, does it really matter if their offense is still great? Like, if they're not shooting well from three, like, in your opinion?
Yes, because while they may score 116 on the Warriors or on the Jazz and be able to beat them, when they score 116 on the Warriors are liable to score 120. So you need to be, you need to lift up your offense and your defense even further. The defense has lifted it up recently. I'm buying into the defense as much as a defense can be bought into, but I need to see them hit more threes.
Yeah, their defense is still shocking to me. Like, we talked about on the last podcast, like, they've been, like, from regular season to postseason, they're on a totally different level. And maybe it's because they're playing some undermanned, you know, undermanned teams. Like, Jimmy Butler was injured, and you could totally tell he wasn't himself in that first round. And in this round, they're playing without Ricky Rubio, who was a pretty consistent positive force for the Jazz. So maybe it's just that, but they, in general, I just think they've been really impressive defensively. So I'm with you. I'm fully bought into the defense, and I'm there with the offense, man. Like, as long as the Rockets are, like, getting good actions, and it doesn't matter if they're really making it in my, like, as long as, like, defenses are still trusting them to make it, like, as long as they're still getting that consistent respect and that consistent spacing, it just doesn't really matter to me. Maybe it's just me. Like, as long as someone's still shading there and making a tough decision, should I cover this guy? Should I leave this guy? Or should I help cover this pick and roll in the middle of the floor? I still think they're going to get really great offense.
I mean, I think there is a certain point at which if the Warriors' offense is running well enough and the Rockets are consistently shooting under 33% from three-point range, then the Warriors can just say, you know what, we're just not going to worry about those threes.
Well, in the regular season, did you have the numbers on you as to what they shot against the Warriors in those games that they won?
I don't. I can pull them up. All right. I have them here. Noise. Yeah, I have them here now. Okay. So the three games that the Rockets played against the Warriors in the regular season, they shot in the first game, which was a narrow win on opening night. They shot 36.6% from deep. It was 15 out of 41, which is right on target for what they want to do. That's right about as many threes as they usually shoot per game. And that's a little bit better than their average percentage, but within sustainability. The second time they played the Warriors, they lost by 10 points. That was one where they didn't have James Harden. They shot 17 out of 50 at 34%, which is also right in the range they want. And in the last game against the Warriors, they won 116 to 108. And from three-point range, they hit 14 of 37 for 37.8%, which is a little bit low in attempts, but a little bit high in percentage.
Okay, so that's about that's pretty on brand for their percentage throughout the season, though, right? Like 36%?
Yeah, they have around 36% most of the year.
Yeah, so I don't understand. Like, so what are they shooting right now in the postseason? They are shooting 35%. So what's wrong with that?
Well, they've been shooting lower than 35% lately, though. Yeah, that's actually better than I thought. All right, so I am concerned that they're shooting a lower percentage against the Jazz. So hopefully that is just a problem with the Jazz or just variance. I just want to see them shoot a little better, more consistently. They just can't go below 33% and win games against the Warriors.
Okay, I agree with the consistency, though. That's been a real thing for the Rockets. Like, they've been a little bit up and down in the playoffs, but they seem to have settled it down, like, in the second round. Like, they had two very great games against the Jazz. That second game wasn't great, but you're going to get a game like that against the Warriors where shots aren't falling and, you know, your defense just isn't great because you're playing a really great offense who likes to move the ball and likes to swing it, likes to slip ball screens, which was a real thing against the Jazz that Quinn Snyder exploited, where they would fake a screen and then they'd slip just before that screen was really initiated. And it confused the hell out of the Rockets. So the Rockets like to switch everything on defense. So when they fake the ball screen like that and slip, like the Jazz got a ton of open dunks on Rudy Gobert in game two. And that's the thing that the Rockets talked about, that they talked about correcting, and they did it in game three.
But oh boy, did they.
Yeah. Like, in I think this is a perfect warm-up series for the Warriors because the way the Jazz like to play, where they swing the ball side to side and they do a lot of slips on ball screens, like that's a great warm-up for the Warriors. That's what they're gonna do. The Warriors are a ball movement, body movement offense that like to slip screens, that like to do a lot of different creative stuff on offense. They're very egalitarian. And that's exactly what the Jazz are. The Jazz are just a little bit slower at it. They like scoring towards the
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, they're a good practice run. They're just a little slightly slower version of the Warriors.
Yeah, they're a little bit slower in that their actions finish in the late shot clock, and the Warriors finish pretty much in the first 8 seconds. Like in the first 8 seconds, the Warriors are going to get a quality shot, and it's pretty much the opposite for the Jazz, where like it's the bottom 8 seconds, but. If the Rockets can control the pace to a reasonable level in the second round, I mean, in the Western Conference Finals, they're in it, man. Like, they're in it. They're in it if they can, if they pick up these lessons against the Jazz. And, you know, I'm glad that they got beat on slips against in game two. But if they pick up all these lessons and facing a defense like this, it's a great warm up.
Yeah, there's something you said for playing a team that makes you have to clean your act up and get it together a bit. This is, I think, like I said, a really good warm-up team, not just because they play a little similar to the Warriors, but because they're just a good team. And so playing against a good team forces you to have a great defense. Yeah. Which is funny because people are saying, oh, the Spurs will be a really good first-round matchup for the Warriors because it'll make the Warriors work a bit, except they didn't. So this is weird to say, but I think a lot of how the conference finals goes, assuming the Rockets and Warriors both make it to the conference finals, which is pretty likely, depends on how much the Warriors are still sandbagging. And once again, it's hard to tell with them, right? There's been so much like discussion of how much they're caring, how much they're actually working at it, that even right now, does it feel like you have a good handle for like how much effort they're giving?
Yeah, I think they're about 80%. Like, if I were to put a percentage on it, which is, you know, reasonably high. Like in the regular season, they were about 70, and I think like they won round one in 5 games, and they're on pace to do the same in round two. So I mean, like, I don't know how much better they can really reasonably get from now until the conference finals.
Yeah, I think we just don't know. I think it's just hard to tell how much they can get better, right? It might be a lot. It might be that they just haven't cared about any opponent yet, and that they are just, when they see the Rockets, they'll just put their game faces on. And
they have a lot of disdain for the Rockets. Like, the Warriors do not respect the Rockets at all. And it's not just them. It's their fan base, everything about the Warriors. They do not respect what the Rockets are putting out. At the beginning of the year, Draymond Green had this great interview where he talked about Daryl Morey's quotes about, you know, oh, there have been greater upsets in NBA history. And Draymond was just like, what the f*** are they talking about? That's the kind of reaction he had.
Yeah, they seem offended by the idea that the Rockets think they can do this, which they probably shouldn't let the Rockets have the number one seed if they didn't want to give them that. But be that as it may, it's hard to tell how it's going to be. We still don't really know how much Curry's injury is going to hinder him. We don't know how much like weird malaise they have. We don't know how much like Clay's thumb's going to bother him. Actually, we do. It's not bothering him at all. He's scoring a billion points per game. But yeah, there are some question marks there. So
I think Steph is a great question mark. Steph in his knee and how much it's recovered by the Western Conference Finals. We talked about it before the playoffs started. That's going to be a real bellwether for everybody involved, for the Warriors and how great their offense is functioning, for the Rockets and how much they have a chance against this team. Like, it's going to be a game changer. We've said it a billion times. The Warriors are not the Warriors without Steph Curry at 100%. They just aren't. Yeah. They're a totally different team.
Yeah, and they have to get right because the Rockets are, assuming they beat the Jazz, which is, once again, not done yet. They haven't beat the Jazz yet, but they're well on the way. Assuming they make it there, they're going to be coming at them full speed. So it should be fun to watch, unless it isn't. I mean, so my official stance right now regarding about if the Rockets can beat the Warriors is nobody can beat, like, the Warriors are unbeatable unless they're not.
Listen, when we do our picks, like, I'm not going to blame you at all if you pick the Warriors. I'm picking the Warriors, right? Like, we're all on the same page. Like, I think when the postseason started And up until this point, you kind of drifted to the opposite direction.
Yeah, I mean, I'm never going to pick against the Warriors, but my degree of certainty is extremely low. Like, the thing that I think Matt Moore likes to do, where they put, like, a percentage, like, of certainty on their prediction, like, how good they feel about it. I'm still going to pick the Warriors in probably, like, six, but I have a very, very low degree of certainty. And the only reason I wouldn't pick them in seven is because I think that home teams don't lose in game sevens, by the way, which is one of the biggest advantages the Rockets have. If they can force a game seven, they have a huge advantage.
Yeah, and speaking of Curry getting right, I'm surprised we didn't talk about this. Mbah Mute was a huge boost to the Rockets and their defense and everything they do. They're so much more disciplined when Mbah Mute is on the floor. Like, he just doesn't miss rotations. He's very crisp in how he runs the floor. And that's it sounds weird to say, but he really does make a lot of cuts on offense. Like, he cuts a lot. And he runs out in transition. The Rockets like to find him running deep. And he's missing a lot of layups right now, but I'm sure a lot of that has to do with the shoulder and the nervousness of him going up with the ball. Like, the Rockets don't want him dunking at all. Like, I don't want him dunking at all. I'd rather he miss layups than dunk the basketball. It's gotten to the point where, like, I'm just deeply afraid for his shoulder, like, in re-injuring him. And we're in the final stretch, and no team, like, if the basketball gods can give us anything, just give us a healthy Warriors-Rockets. Both sides. Healthy Warriors-Rockets. Everybody wants to see it. Everybody's been waiting for it all year long. That's all we want. That's all there's left. And if we can get that, it'd be such a blessing.
I mean, there's still this round left. We can't, you know, we're only three games into these series. We shouldn't leave them behind right now.
Which is why I'm praising the basketball gods to give us healthy Western Conference finals.
Yeah, we get to see what happens to the Pelicans. I'm not hopeful that the Pelicans are going to win another game in a series, but kudos to them for blowing out the Warriors. And I think, like I said, we're gonna learn a lot about the Rockets with how they respond tonight, because it'd be very easy to chill and just kind of not go 100%. But they have a real chance to effectively end this series.
Right, to step on their throat a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. To go back into Houston up 3-1 lets you close out in Houston. That is a huge deal. Like, there is a huge difference between being up 3-1 and being tied 2-2.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I know there's been jokes about 3-1 leads and all, but it is extremely difficult to come back from a 3-1 lead. Like, it is statistically and historically extremely difficult. In recent years, it's happened a lot more, but it just doesn't happen. Like, I guess recently, like, the variance in three-point shooting has really caused 3-1 leads to be really not as big of a mark as it was before. But
also had a lot of teams who were similar to each other in quality, and right. Then you likely get more kind of, I think you're right with that, and also closer quality of teams, but the Rockets are significantly better than Jazz. So if the better team goes up 3-1, especially with two or three blowouts, well, you know what's going to happen.
Right, yeah, yeah. That's exactly how I feel. Yeah, I mean, we pretty much talked this all, like, we're pretty much done with the Jazz until the series is over. I don't really have much to say on this. They put up a great fight. I want to see how they respond with a healthy Ricky Rubio if they get him back in this series. They'll probably get him back in, like, game 5-ish if he comes back. Like, they said 10 to 15 days, so that's around game 4, game 5. Like, maybe he comes back for tomorrow. I have a hard time believing that because there hasn't been any reporting on Ricky Rubio's return. So you're probably looking at a game 5 return, if anything. And you know, he's a big force for that team. Like, he is legitimately a positive offensive and a positive defensive player for the Jazz. So that's something to look out for. Other than that, I don't really have anything else to say on this series. I'm kind of waiting for this thing to be over, kind of much like the middle of Rockets Wolves. Like, I'm at that same point.
Like in a lot of playoff series, I think a lot of the adjustments have been made. Like, it usually takes 3 or 4 games for all the adjustments that are going to be made in these playoff series, and then they just kind of play out how they're going to play out. which right. is sort of the dirty secret. It's not like it's not always just like a chess match of back and forth coaching. Eventually, both teams have kind of maximized things as best as that iteration of them is going to be able to, and they just kind of duke it out till somebody wins.
Right. Some of the greatest adjustments in playoff history have happened around Game 3 and Game 4. Right. Like or like. You know, early in the series, it doesn't happen game 6 and 7, right? Like unless we're talking about a critical suspension or like a crazy blowout
injury or something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like you don't get much game changers late into a series. But hopefully we don't get any injuries both sides. Hopefully we don't get any injuries on the other side of the bracket. The basketball gods, if you're truly looking out for us, please give us a healthy Warriors Rockets. We've been asking for it all year. That's all we want. We don't want anything else. Like we're not asking for any particular outcome. Just give us that. That's all we want. That's all we want.
Hey, I'm going to ask for a healthy everybody.
Healthy everybody.
Healthy everyone everywhere. No more injuries. Let's just see the NBA the best it can be.
The best two teams duke it out. Let's see it happen. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Google Play and Stitcher. Give us a follow on Twitter at Red Nation News at Do Not. Give us a rating on iTunes if you enjoyed the show, please. It helps people find the show. And yeah, guys, good night.